You know what? I'm going to do an intro because we never do a musical intro
Okay.
to this.
All right.
So, and a one and a two. Da 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 da
Dun,
da da
dun, dun, dun,
da
dun, dun, dun. So we're doing the Beavis and Butthead
We're
intro.
Literally, yes, this was the intro.
Yeah.
This
sure,
was the first commercial for Beavis and Butthead. It predated my knowledge of Black Sabbath. And I was just like, what is this riff?
What the hell is this? Why are we talking like this?
I feel bad that every time I record with you, I'm too lazy to drop the musical intro in after the fact, and the people need music.
That's right.
It lets them know that happiness and mirth is soon to follow.
Signified by Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
That's right.
God bless Black
by
Sabbath.
By Beavis and Butthead's Black Sabbath.
Yeah. They did that. They did Electric Funeral by Sabbath.
Yeah.
And I think they did, well, they would announce Breaking the Law.
Right.
Instead of the riff, they would actually go, Breaking the Law, Breaking the Law.
Breaking the Law.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
For the seismic impact that show had on my life,
right.
I do not acknowledge it nearly enough. I that entire generation of boys my age, we were, I think, fifth or sixth grade when
right.
that dropped. I cannot tell you when we stopped talking like this to each other.
Hey, Beavis.
Yeah,
Plus, I mean, here's the thing, too. Like Beavis and Butthead were actually exceptional critics of rock videos. Like, they were actually really good at that.
They were very plugged in,
yeah.
And what broke my heart as a fan of really extreme metal at that time, like
right.
death metal, their tastes in rock extended up through Pantera.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I think...
one of my favorite lines from that show was when Men Without Hats, the safety dance came on.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the safety dance, it's safe to dance. And like, you see the shot of like Beavis and Butthead just looking at each other. And like, I think it was like Butthead said, you know what, Beavis? These guys like can't dance. and Beavis said, yeah, these guys like need to go to a Pantera concert and learn how to dance.
My favorite aspect of the Pantera viewing
right.
was they would refer to singer Phil Anselmo as Pantera.
Right.
And there's one episode they're doing an impression of Pantera's dad. Damn it, Pantera, get me a beer. They would do that all the time. The singer was just the band name. But they stopped at Pantera, maybe because Mike Judge was a Texas guy, so
right.
that was acceptable.
Right.
But they played Carcass one time,
right.
and they were shitting all over Carcass. They're like, this butt one sounds like Dave Mustaine. And I was like, that's a great thing. God damn you. How dare you shit on Mustaine? And they were also very critical of Morbid Angel.
Yeah. Which, but I would always get, like, whenever, like, the weird non-metal videos would come on, like they were awesome. Like one time Venus by Bananarama came on. I remember the video.
Yes.
There's like this hot chick in like tight red leather pants dancing, and Butthead said, hey Beavis, check it out, Satan's got back.
Show was so great.
That was awesome. I love that show.
Oh my god damn. Yeah, I really don't know when I stopped. I spent the entirety of seventh grade with a bunch of other little virginal headbangers
right.
in our little black shorts, black t-shirt,
right.
black sneakers uniform.
Right.
And we had teachers, we were divided by teams, as it was called back then. So
right.
you would be in the same English and math and all this shit.
With your team.
Yeah, with my team.
Right.
Team A, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And anytime a teacher would say erect or hard or
yeah.
we would literally just go, ooh. All of us in unison, like five of us just go, ooh. And our science teacher, our biology teacher, Mrs. Swanson, one time fucking lost it. Just kicks us all out and is screaming like, breasts, nipples, vagina, anus. I mean, it was literally like that scene out of the show where Buzzcut is teaching sex ed.
Right.
And he's like, we're going to be talking about the penis. And then she fucking flipped out in the same way. Just kicked us all out. She couldn't take it anymore. It was the entirety of a goddamn school year. Ooh. Just
ooh.
Little ooh. So stupid. We thought we were so fucking clever.
So did you remember how whenever Todd... The
yes.
older rocker would come
yes.
around, and like you'd see like the hearts come out of like because they were like so in love with him, right? Right.
The pecking order was Todd, Beavis and Butthead, and then Stewart.
Yeah, exactly right. There was nobody else in the neighborhood.
No, just those four.
Except
the Hank Hill voice guy.
The Hank Hill, you know, those two neighborhood kids, Beavis and Butt Rank, are kind of what? Yeah.
fuck me, that fucking show.
So how you been?
I've been well.
Yeah.
I've been well. I've been journaling.
Yes.
That's been my thing for the last week or two.
You've been, now let me ask, what's your preferred medium of journaling? Do you write in longhand, or do you use a computer and take notes that way?
I cannot do a computer because there's this thing called pornography. And if I'm even near a browser, it's just like ghost hand, like phantom hand shit takes over. I'm just like, why are we at Bang Bros? I don't know how this happened. And the other phantom hand does it. Like, yeah. I can do nothing productive whatsoever on a computer.
Well,
I really can't.
Yeah, literally, you can't do it. You have to do all your work in longhand because...
If I'm being serious about it, yeah.
Right.
Like, I have to be in an incredibly zen state to look at a computer screen, have my hands on a keyboard, and not, like, no bullshit, have just autonomic one window's open to profootballtalk.com.
Right.
Four Reddit windows. You know, maybe SI or ESPN if I want to do a little non-football browsing.
Right.
And then, yeah, the porn after, like, 10 minutes where you're like, I've read everything, so time to... Time to do that.
So do you set aside a certain time to journal every morning?
No, I just try to get it done, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
When I've lived my day, and I've been taking, I just completed a 4-week Second City class, how to write online satire.
Right.
I think the secret is to write things you don't find are very funny.
Tell me why that is.
Because I'm not very highbrow. Sean Westfall, this, you know, my reverence for Beavis and Butthead and death metal might have misled you, but I don't really read McSweeney's.
Right.
I don't read Reductress.
Right.
I don't read, well, here's a highbrow name, Robot Butt.
Right.
We've been instructed to pitch to Robot Butt.
Robot Butt.
Shit,
okay.
You're not.
Right.
And I don't, The New Yorker, not a big New Yorker guy. And these are all the sites I was supposed to be familiar with. Before, or at least in the course of this class, get familiar, toot sweet with.
Why do you think, do you think that you're willfully, or do you think that you're not highbrow or high-minded enough to read? Like, how come you don't read those sites? Because they're funny as hell.
I don't, for the most part, I just don't, like, Onion. The Onion, I think, is fucking brilliant.
It is.
You can be... a goddamn kicked in the goat as a toddler car mechanic and still read The Onion and get The Onion.
Do you think so? That might be, maybe car mechanic, but not kicked in the forehead by a goat car mechanic.
That's true.
Because they will take it literally.
There is a website dedicated to people
who take The Onion literally.
Okay, so maybe if you have a fucking horseshoe... Right. Like the Colts logo in the middle of your goddamn head. Maybe The Onion is too much for you.
Right.
Whatever reason, I think The Onion has never been touched in terms of satire. Now, do I read a bunch of satire? I do not.
Right.
Again, I read the plot points to various Bang Brothers videos and the Bang Brothers subsidiaries. I'm very big, again, on Pro Football Talk. Mike Florio and company were just picking games for the weekend. Spoiler, they're thinking the Browns are going to win at home tonight.
So do you read Deadspin? Because that's sort of a satirical sports site.
That one doesn't strike my fancy either.
Well, tell me why.
It just, that one seems a little too lowbrow for me. I really.
There's a sweet spot online somewhere for you.
If
it's somewhere between The Onion and...
It's Reddit, like mostly Reddit.
Gangbang videos on
I need that sweet spot. No, if I were literally Goldilocks picking porridge, there's like a fucking thimble of porridge where I'm like, just right. Everything else I can't handle.
Wait, was that your Goldilocks voice?
Yeah. That's
Do that again, please.
Just right. This bed's too soft.
That sounds more like Howie Mandel's version of like Goldilocks voice or something.
That is actually my impression of Howie Mandel's Bobby character.
Bobby, hello, I'm Bobby.
Holy shit! Okay,
my name is Bobby.
That is a good Bobby.
I got a million of them, kid. I got a million of them.
God damn. I did not know until about 2 weeks ago that Bobby was a character outside of that failed cartoon.
He was doing that like back in 1984, 85. Howie Mandel is actually, he's like an old dude. Like I was surprised to find out how old Howie Mandel actually is.
Really?
You think of him as being like in his late
20s.
Late 20s. But he's close. He's pushing. Maybe someone out there can convince. I want to say he's in like his mid 60s.
I can believe that.
He's an older guy.
Because if you're saying mid 80s, I know he's huge mid 80s. Let's say he's 30 there.
Yeah.
So.
And that was 70 years ago.
It was.
So he's 145.
Fuck, this is why you do The New Yorker.
He is 172 years old.
God damn. Your knowledge of vampire math is incredible.
Exactly.
Howie Mandel, there's three Jewish performers that look almost interchangeable to me.
Oh, good. We're on the racist green.
Yeah. With just different weight and piercings.
Uh-huh.
Howie Mandel, Dave Draymond, the singer for Disturbed.
Right.
And the fat guy who was Charlotte's husband in Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Like, they're all vaguely interchangeable to me. Like, if you put them at a family reunion, you would not bat an eye, really, until... You would be like, okay, which one of you can do ooh, wah, ah, ah. And then that's, I think, the second week in a row.
I'm Bobby.
Yeah, and Bobby gives him away. No, it's just my brother was always taken with that. He's like, those guys look exactly alike. This is weird. And I'm like, yeah, I guess, you know, they pulled the I'm balding, shave my head card. And
right.
Once you don't have hair distinguishing you, like, shit narrows down real fast.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the nature of entertainment. You know, if you become an actor, you become a type.
Yeah.
And what you discover is when you go on auditions, there's going to be other actors who look a lot and sound a lot like you. And almost like your doppelganger. It's like you'll be, because they're looking for a certain type, and you fit that type in that role.
So. Artie Lang, back when he was on Stern, again, very highbrow taste over here.
Artie Lang
used to talk about Horatio Sanz being like his sworn enemy. Like,
yeah, because
literally everything.
Yeah, because they would go up for the same shit all the time. Yeah.
Just be like, hey, what's up?
Right.
What up, guy? I know that it's us two against each other.
Right.
So, yeah, we were talking Bobby. We were talking these classes. I think that's where...
Journaling.
My journaling.
Journaling. So and in your... here's the thing. You describe yourself as lowbrow, but you're journaling.
Yes. My journaling sounds exactly like those letters that, like, Confederate and Union soldiers would send out.
My dearest Gertrude, damn this war. I don't think we'll ever be able to escape Nob's Hill.
Influenza has claimed Robert. And
the damn Yankees have got us surrounded. General Sherman thinks that he can outfox us, but he doesn't know good old Bobby Lee.
Tell me Atlanta still stands.
Please tell me that Atlanta still stands and has not been burned in a conflagration caused by Sherman's march. I don't know why.
That devil Grant.
God bless the Confederacy.
And I'm the racist.
That's
dog.
Right. That's
and
right.
I'm the racist. Yeah, I've been journaling. Once I started doing this writing class, I quickly was looking for ways to write that weren't work.
Right.
Because that's how my... If you said there was a job that paid you to look at pornography and Reddit,
right.
I suddenly would be reading the New Yorker feverishly. Like, I would have it on an iPad while I dropped a deuce. I'd just be like, can I get enough New Yorker? Reddit? Hell with that. So I started the journaling, and...
I love how you call it the journaling.
The journaling.
It's not journaling, it's the journaling.
Journaling, yes. I like putting that in front of everything, really.
Right.
I refer to it as the Independence Day 4.
Right.
The Goodfellas. The Die Hard. So I started journaling, and the best part, for me at least, is keeping track of a lot of the weird things I see day to day in my job. I'm a locksmith.
Yes.
And I interact with multiple people. I go into their homes.
Yes.
And I have to meet several people a day typically. And a lot of that stuff is just dust in the wind.
Right.
Like, I spent several years doing foreclosures in D.C. when the market took a shit.
Right.
And the weird situations I broke into over and over and over were baffling. Like, places where there had been dog fights.
Wow.
You know, just like people that had gutted their homes and like fucked up the walls as a fuck you.
Wow.
Like properties over in was it Sheriff Road? Like in Northeast.
Right.
Where I busted in and I could tell there were squatters and there were like pipes and knives by the door, I guess, to guard the entrance. And I was like, I had to, like, that property, for whatever reason, I had to go to twice. And I remember both times just thinking, like, I risked getting my fucking skull bashed in for, like, $120. I hope it was worth it. So I had a couple of work incidents of note this week. And because they're in the journal alongside some other stuff, I actually remembered to bring them to the show. They're not lost.
Right. So are you going to recite these incidents in that sort of like Southern Civil War? Like, the other day I was imposing upon an abode in the Shillington area of Northern Virginia.
If I were skilled on any level in mimicry, I would in a heartbeat.
All right. So
I'm just me.
To tell us what went on.
So the first thing that really screwed with me, and this is what got me journaling, I needed to dodge work and I needed to write down this incident.
Right.
Was I get into a house, lady has hired me to change her door locks.
Right.
Don't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
I see at her feet a German Shepherd
mm-hmm.
that looks like its tongue is just lapping the side of its muzzle, but permanently.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, oh, what a weird dog. It has like a paralyzed tongue thing and that's what it's doing.
Right.
Cool. I walk in, this poor thing has a, this is nothing humorous at all. I don't know why the fuck I'm even doing this segment. This poor thing has a massive ruptured tumor on the side of its muzzle. And it's sweet as can be. I'm petting it.
Right.
And this lady's like, oh, yeah, sorry about her. We're putting her down tomorrow, actually.
Jesus.
This is how I'm starting my workday.
Right.
Tumor dog that has 24 hours on this fucking planet. Like, literally, I know you aren't a huge video gamer. For those of you that know Majora's Mask Zelda, it's like Dawn at the Last Day. Like, that is a game based on 3 days that repeat over and over and over, and the final day where shit's hitting the fan, Sean, it says Dawn of the Last Day.
Wow.
The dog is having Dawn of the Last Day right now.
Wow.
And I get really pissed because this woman is one of those people that just smokes indoors.
Right.
Like, you can smoke as much as you want outdoors. I frankly don't give a fuck. But I feel a line is crossed into a certain tier of white trashery.
Right.
When you're just like, fuck it, I'm not missing, my price is right.
Right. Like, I'm going to sit.
I'm not paying for the DVR.
In my lazy boy glider.
I don't give a fuck that it's Drew Carey now.
In my house coat, in my zipped up house coat. And smoke and watch Drew Carey.
And it got my head racing because I'm picturing all the years. You know, she's going on about how old this dog is.
Right.
And that's why this is happening. But, like, for fuck's sake, maybe if your dog wasn't at your feet while you smoked like a goddamn chimney.
Are you suggesting that secondhand cigarettes were the cause of this dog's tumor?
Maybe. That's why your dog looks like something from the fucking mist.
And I know that you are a big pet owner. You love your cats, right?
I am weird about animals.
Yeah.
I do not like to see them suffer.
Right.
I don't eat organisms more advanced than like shrimp and scallops and that kind of crap.
I did not know that about you.
I try not to.
Right.
Like, if someone's like, hey, the entire pizza's pepperoni.
Uh-huh.
I think it's almost more disrespectful for the dead pig to, like, pick off the chunks and be I'm not a hardcore Muslim. That was Goldilocks picking off the pepperoni, by the way. This pepperoni's too piggish. I'll just shove it in.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't try to... I'm not going to just get a goddamn steak. Like, I feel bad about that. A fucking crab? That's a damn ocean cockroach. That's I can look a crab in the eyes as I kill it. I don't care about that. But a cow larger than me? I don't do that.
So, how was this thing? Did it resolve itself? You just like fixed her locks and left, right?
I did her locks and just felt horrible and quietly seethed at her. I think it was a trigger for me as well because my pops, I think, smoked indoors until I was like 9 or 10.
Right.
And I mean, like, the ceilings were stained.
Yeah,
I missed, I want to say in the neighborhood of 30 days a year to bronchitis up through like second grade.
Really?
And my brother needed ear tubes because of this shit. And then my mom was finally like, dude, you need to get the fuck out of the house for the smoking.
Right.
And the next day I missed like two days, that kind of shit.
Right.
And it was only because I faked tummy aches to play Final Fantasy
right.
at home. So yeah, that, I don't know what untold chromosomal damage has been wrecked upon me thanks to that crap.
I grew up in a house where my mother smoked. She smoked in the house.
Like hardcore?
She was a hardcore smoker.
Okay.
And I remember an incident when I was young being on the swim team, and there was a bit like before one of our practices, there was a bunch of grab ass between me and a couple of other swimmers. And I remember
shock grab assery.
just blatant grab. And I remember like running after this guy and getting winded. And the guy said, "You're winded? You're a swimmer." And I go, "Oh yeah, I guess I am." It's kind of weird. And I didn't even put the two together.
What age was this?
I was like 13 or 14.
Oh, that's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell a story of like looking over at the next lane and your mom was like doing a backstroke just with a cigarette sticking up.
That's where I should have gone.
Like a periscope.
See, this is why I don't write satire either. Because
wait, okay. You're saying your lungs were pure at 13/14. When did you, and if like your health insurance guys are listening to this and you haven't disclosed,
I have never smoked
status,
a day in my life. Yeah.
This is all theater.
Right. I'm playing a character.
Sean Westfall Theater.
In fact,
owner,
I'll talk in a different voice as I to describe this. That'll.
I hear this different voice. This is the character, Sean Westfall Smoker. Right. When did Sean Westfall Smoker start smoking?
So I was actually talking to someone about this last night because there's a woman who's in one of my improv classes, and she's an Air Force officer.
Okay.
And before the class, she was smoking, and I sort of joined her, and I said, "Yeah, you know."
Did she have the aviator shades on and the scarf?
she's a badass, and she'll kill you too, by the way. But anyway, we were talking about this, and I said, "Yeah, I started smoking in basic training." And she goes, "Yeah, I know." She goes, "They've done a study that a lot of people who end up smoking in the Air Force started smoking in basic training. And the reason you start smoking in basic training, and I've heard this from a number of people who've gone through Air Force basic training, is because, you know, when you're in basic training, they march you around, and all of a sudden you come to back to the squadron, and they put you at parade rest, right? And you stand at parade rest, except if you're a smoker. They say, smokers, fall out, go to the butt can. The rest
Holy
of you
shit.
Stand at parade rest. I'm going like, fuck that. I'm a smoker now.
So my God.
I initially would bum cigarettes, and then I went, you know, when we got our, you know, we got our opportunity to go to the base exchange and buy stuff, I bought a couple packs of cigarettes, and I began falling out and smoking. And I smoked for all throughout the military, wherever I was stationed. And not only that, but I smoked in. You could smoke in the dorms at that time. So you had to be sort of careful with your roommate, because your roommate, you know, if your roommate was like a guy who like sensitive to smoke, you couldn't smoke. But like, luckily I had some. Cool
I thought you were going to say you pull a Private Pile.
That's
beat
right.
The shit out of him with soap. You all dream fat boy.
That's right. Private Gomer Pile. You could be in my rifle corps any day. But I smoked through all throughout the military, up to a year and a half after I got out, and I got married after I got out of the military. And I can tell you what compelled me to quit smoking the first time. And once I quit for like 20 some odd years.
Oh, so you're fresh back to it.
I'm fresh back to it in the last couple of years.
Oh, God.
So I'll tell you this story. This is the so I'm not making this up. I was this is like 1989. And one day, I'm home alone during the afternoon, and I'm watching CNN. And CNN used to have these segments when it was a slow news day, like, where are they now, right? And we still have these sort of websites. And where
Shirley
are
Temple.
Whatever it happened to. And they caught up with the guy who was, and I'm not making this up, the original Darren on Bewitched.
Okay.
His name was Dick York.
Yes.
And he was replaced by a guy named Dick Sargent, and nobody noticed. Right?
As a guy, I wasn't around for that. One of them was like flamboyantly gay or something like that?
No. Okay. Well, I'm sorry, you're right. Dick Sargent was flamboyantly gay.
Okay.
Dick York was a bit of a basket case. Like, he actually left the program at the height of its success because he wanted to go do, he was like, you know, he got really into the 60s and he wanted to go, you know, explore and find himself. And, you know, the usual sort of like, you know, nothing good's going to come from this, right?
So the words, I need to find myself.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, when you turn your back on that, your career's over. Yeah. That's like, you've had your shot. That's it. You know, fuck you. So he bummed around for a few years, and they actually caught up with him when he was living in some suburb of Detroit. Again, Detroit. Yeah. Not anywhere glamorous. Detroit, Michigan.
His neighbor, Eminem.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like a good suburb of Detroit. It was like a bunch of ranch houses that were built in like post-World War II. They were real small ones to house people who would actually go work in the factories.
I was going to say literally GM slave quarters.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And you know, they took a shot of exterior. There's this like broken down car in his driveway, and the shrubs haven't been changed. And then they do some internal shots of him and then an interview inside his house. And
like a colonoscopy.
It's bric-a-brac with all kinds of weird, crazy memorabilia, to include Bewitched memorabilia and a couple other stuff, but you know, all kinds of other weird shit. It's like he's a hoarder, right? The guy is sick. Like visibly sick. He's suffering from emphysema, right?
Okay.
He doesn't even have the what's the word I'm looking for?
The cancer kazoo.
Wait. He doesn't even have the decency to change out of his hospital gown and hospital clothes.
Okay.
From which, you know, he's suffering from this disease at least momentarily. For this interview, like, you know,
he's just open.
He's just you know, he's got the gown and the robe, and he's sitting in a chair, and he's got the tank of oxygen next to him, right? But of course, he's happy as can be. He's happy with the life choices he's made, right?
Oh.
Except they say, so, you know, what do you do now? Now that you're, you know, in the final stages of emphysema and you know. I mean, that wasn't the question, but like, what do you do now? And here's what he did. This is what he claimed he did. He said, "Oh, I make motivational tapes."
Oh no!
And they go, "What?" Yeah, he says, "Yeah, I make motivational tapes," but he doesn't. Here's how he made motivational tapes. He had one of those old time brick cassette recorders,
yes,
that we could all buy from Radio Shack, circa, you know, 19, yeah, you know, 84,
alongside, you know, your bomb parts.
Yeah, exactly, right. Like those, you know, you put it in, not, you know, and he had this like one of those, you know, this cheap condenser. It wasn't a condenser microphone, but like a cheap
something you would record a goddamn answering machine.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. And his version of making motivational tapes went like this. They actually photographed or filmed him doing this. You can be the best person you ever want to be.
Oh, no.
But only if you'd work hard and try hard. You literally hear him gasping for air on some of these motivational tapes.
Holy
and fuck. I looked at that and I saw that.
Please tell me that's on YouTube.
I hope it is. Because I remember seeing it. I remember it enough. It made such a visible sort of impression on me that I said to myself, if you don't quit smoking, this is who you're going to be. You're going to be an old emphysemic man trying to make motivational tapes. And I hadn't even gotten into improv at that time or acting again. You know, I was just like, I knew that that's where I was going to be. And I started tapering down from that minute, from literally turned off the TV and counted the number of cigarettes I had left in my pack and said, okay, I'm going to parse these out. And, you know, we have one of next 2 hours and 4 hours and 6 hours. And when I finish this pack, I'm not going to smoke again. And I swear to God, I did that. And I did not smoke for the next 20 some odd years.
Wow.
Yeah. That seeing that changed my life.
So
I knew that was my
destiny.
We
need to like play that for you again. And it'll be some like Manchurian Candidate shit where like non-smoking Sean just activates.
Right. Exactly. Right.
So what brings you back to the brotherhood?
I don't really know. I know that I don't know. I just, let me put it this way. I used to drink a lot more.
Okay.
I think we all did. And I don't drink as much anymore. Like I don't drink. I used to drink probably at least two or three glasses of wine a night, a half a bottle of wine a night just, you know, just for, you know, because I because that's what I like to do. I still do like the taste of wine. And that was sort of like, and I don't do drugs, like, you know, on a regular basis. I think the last time I smoked pot was like a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe I feel like I need some sort of vice of some sort. I don't know. I really don't know why. I know that Burning Man probably had something to do with it. Like there's something about having fire in your mouth as you're watching other people take part in this festival. So I don't know.
It's funny you say that because I remember thinking that as long as I wasn't smoking like during the summer really as much, I kind of was under control because that's when it's truly like humid, gross air.
Right.
You're like, fuck you, Sky. I got you one better. And
right.
Then you suck down a hot butt. And it's,
right.
That's, you're really inhaling pure poison.
Right.
God, that's funny to me that I have some, I wouldn't say, I got into it earlier.
Right.
I grew up really knowing all the health stuff and being like, I would never touch a cigarette.
Right.
And then I watched the Motley Crue 91 version of the Home Sweet Home video.
Sure.
With Tommy Lee hunched over a piano, a grand piano,
right,
with smoke out of his mouth. So I'm like, I know I shouldn't, but fuck, that looks cool.
Yeah.
And I would have like a perfunctory, like kind of a physical every year. The doctor would, you know, in passing be like, and you're not going to smoke, are you, John? And a couple of months after I'd seen this video like 100 times while it burned up Dial MTV, I was like, eh. He was like, wait, you didn't say no as you normally do. And I was just like, I don't know. It could look cool.
Yeah.
And a couple years later, again, I really had no urge on my own. But a couple years later, when I was starting to define, like kind of rebelling against my little geeky past where I was like, oh, the honor student who, you know, aces all of his little standardized tests and things like that. I had a friend who I'd known from Cub Scouts, and he was like, you want to start smoking? I was like, fuck yeah, this is the day. I just bust out some cigarettes and I start smoking on the way home.
Right.
And I've kind of like on and off dabbled with it. I'm like one of those pieces of shit who's like, if I don't buy them, I ain't addicted.
Right.
And I started buying them heavily in college, similar experience to what you had in the Air Force, where I was in an all-male dorm,
mm-hmm.
and once we were done with our rampant nightly sodomy, easily once or twice a week, just some piece of shit thought it was hilarious to pull the fire alarm.
Right.
And you would not be allowed back in your dorm in the middle of the goddamn night, like 3 a.m., might have a test tomorrow, whatever, easily 30 minutes. The fire department would have to come each fucking time and respond to this and shut down the alarm. And you could either sit there and just freeze in the Virginia Tech mountain air of Blacksburg, or you could suck down a couple cigarettes and be like, I planned this all along.
Right.
Who needs a solid 8 hours when you can get a couple of these?
Right.
And that was when I really started buying them, to deal with those damn fire drills, because otherwise you're just doing nothing. We didn't have cell phones back then. If I had an iPhone back then, I would have never fallen back into it.
Right.
But that's what got me.
Yeah, and you know, I grew up under the same circumstances. Like, both my grandparents died of cancer, died of lung cancer. Like my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, used to smoke Camel non-filtered.
Oh.
She was a hardcore smoker.
That is fucking ballsy.
And my mother died of cancer, but with, she also had emphysema at the end of her life. So, you know, I know this isn't smart. It's like, but, you know, this is the thing. It's like, you know, it's, and maybe this brings us to a bigger conversation about addiction, right?
Okay.
You know, people who judge other people because of their addictions, it's not like, you know, addicts don't know. It's not like cigarette smokers don't fucking know what's going to happen. It's not like addicts don't know the consequences of doing drugs or drinking as frequently as they do. It's just that their minds don't work the way yours do.
You're able to just think to yourself, I'm going to dodge the consequences, or, you know, I'm not going to be one that gets lung cancer. Like, for me, my biggest vice, as I rest my forearm across my fucking paunch to record this show, I've been a big food guy, since I was a kid. And there have been times where I was mostly in shape, and this is probably, like, my all-time fattest right now.
Right.
And I try my ass off to lose it, but so many times throughout the week. It's just like, you know what? You deserve a pizza, big man.
Right.
And it's hard in the moment to say no. And I thank God that that is the extent
right.
of my vices, because it could be drugs. Like, I feel bad for people because you can be wired in all these horrible ways. Did you ever see that movie Happiness, I think it was called?
I've heard about it. I heard it, but I haven't seen it, though.
Yeah, and there's this one dude who's a pedophile in
right.
Happiness. And, like, they make it clear, which is pretty much how I think, if you are into that stuff, you're just wired that way. Like, that's your sexuality. You're just
right.
attracted to kids.
Right.
Like, you don't fucking twirl your mustache like Snidely Whiplash.
Right.
It's just, like, imagine the way you're into women, Sean.
Right.
These guys are into little dudes'
yeah.
butts.
Right,
you know?
Right,
and you're
right,
like,
right,
holy
right.
fuck, you couldn't win that war.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm just like, thankfully, all I like is carbs.
Right.
Instead of little kids.
Right.
You know,
right
or anything
right.
weird like that shit.
Right.
But you're right. Addiction, you're fucked for the most part. Like,
yeah, there was a couple episodes of The West Wing. You ever watched The West Wing?
I did the first couple of seasons
recently.
Yeah,
that dealt with Leo McGarry's
yes.
Alcoholism. And you know, like, there was this one episode where this junior staffer working at the White House sort of leaked his health records and basically said, you know, Leo McGarry's an alcoholic, right? And there was a huge, you know, it made a couple of headlines and things like that. And he, you know, he called her into the office to talk to her before he, you know, before he was about to fire
and then
her.
Beat her to death with a bowling trophy.
And yeah, and then basically, just beat the shit out of her. No, he said, okay, so before we leave, you know, why don't you have this conversation? And she said, you know, well, because you're an alcoholic and you're in charge of a lot of people. And sometimes, you know, she basically, it was a bit of naivete, but it was naivete informed by her own experience. You could tell, and it was unwritten, that she'd had experience with someone close to her being an alcoholic
yeah.
who had damaged her or damaged her life in some way. And there was this line in the script where she says, you know, why don't you think about before you take a drink? And he said, because I don't want one drink. I want them all.
Yeah.
I don't want a drink. I want all the drinks. And she said, why is that? She goes, I'm an alcoholic. Because that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One isn't enough, and a thousand, one is too many, and a thousand isn't enough.
Exactly.
It's
some sort of faulty learning mechanism, I think, is what
I don't think it's
looking.
Learning. I think it's your brain works differently. Your brain has...
Your brain has learned just fine what makes it happy.
In the way that, you know, you've heard me say, you know, and we've talked about before on this program that you know, your brain is enemy territory. For alcoholics, it's really deadly enemy territory.
Yeah.
Because the things that and I'm you know, and please don't, I'm, this is, I, A, I'm not a medical professional, and B, I am not an alcoholic, but, you know, having, you know, knowing people who are, I know that, you know, it's just, this is the way your brain is wired. This is the what you want. You know, when I remember reading an interview with Eric Clapton one time. And
was he talking about shoving his kid off the...
Yeah, he was talking about, literally talking about that.
Okay.
But no,
fucked up thing he did, that Grammy.
Don't you think? But he was talking about how when he drank his first beer at 16, and he thought... I'm really good at this. I'm really good at
guitar.
This. Yeah, like he said, and other people who have gone through this have said the same thing. It's like going home. This is like, yep, this is where I'm at. This is my happy place. And it becomes your happy place until it starts being unmanageable and destroying your life. And they in many ways have limited control over how their brain operates.
I have a question. Semi-related to this,
sure.
Was it him who creepily stalked, kind of, and then banged George Harrison's wife, or vice versa?
Well, I mean, it takes three to tango, especially in rock and roll circles. My understanding of that situation. I love how I could just casually, just sort of like go right into this question, just ask her, answer her question.
I knew you'd have the answer.
George probably wasn't the best husband.
Yeah.
And George had a lot of other interests in addition to Patty.
Were these vaginal interests?
Not just vaginal interests, but spiritual interests.
Oh, okay.
He was trying to get rid of his ego, right? So he would jet off to India and hang out with the Hare Krishnas and
Get explosive diarrhea.
Get explosive diarrhea and take lessons from Ravi Shankar about how to play the sitar. So he was a pretty distracted guy during that time. Meanwhile, Eric Clapton is hopelessly addicted to heroin. He's gone from beer to alcohol to heroin.
He's got a lot of homes, it sounds
and,
like.
And pining away for Patty Boyd, whom he actually loved and adored. And basically they just divorced and Eric and Patty got married. That marriage didn't last long either, but because
he killed the son.
Why do you keep going back to that? They were divorced well before that horrible tragic thing happened.
Air quote accident.
What is wrong with you?
You know what? I'm not into Pizzagate, but we all know the truth in this one. Come on.
They remain friends. It's like, you know, yeah. but here's a, like, Patty Boyd is the is the rock and roll muse. You know this, right?
Oh, she was
the one that compelled George to write Something.
Okay.
And she was also the one that compelled Clapton to write Layla.
Really?
Like, two of the greatest, you know, rock anthems ever recorded were basically inspired by this one woman.
Did she get anything out of Sha Na Na? That's what I'm wondering.
And that's everyone's follow-up question. I think that Bowser's been on why he wrote.
But she's snooping Bowser.
Do 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 do. Good night, sweetheart. Now it's time to go. He's yeah. It was inspired by Patty Boyd.
Oh, fucking hell, man. Oh, God. You want to do some Burning Man talk? We can circle back to my journal.
It's entirely up to you. This is your show.
I'll throw another journal nugget in because I don't want to interrupt your Burning Man stuff.
All right.
So I have another customer.
Yeah.
Yesterday, actually.
Right.
Really sweet guy.
Right.
And I'm not saying this to run him down or anything, but once we're settling up, I look over and I see his right hand, and it's like, you... Again, this is going to come off sounding incredibly dickish.
You mean your comments about Eric Clapton killing his son aren't already?
No, that's just me sounding the clarion of truth.
Right.
That's like you shitting on Paul Revere, warning about the British. Like, that's just me saying, don't be alone with that man on a balcony, all right?
What's wrong with you? Who hurt you?
Eric fucking Clapton. Because the first time I heard Layla was that unplugged version. So there you go.
There you go.
I'm looking at his hand, and it's not like you can tell, like, scarred, and it's not burned,
right.
But it looks almost like an expanded toad kind of around the hand.
Right.
Like this, like a diseased type flesh. And I'm just, I get in my own head, and I'm like, oh, fuck, is this like a wart situation? Like, mm-hmm. Am I going to catch something here?
Right.
But I...
You do know that stuff like that isn't generally communicable, right? You know that, right?
Tell that to my head in a moment, sir.
If someone's lost a limb, that doesn't mean you're going to lose a limb if you come into contact with them. You know that, right?
I mean, rub the stump in the heat of the full moon in a circle of garlic, see what happens.
What is wrong with you?
I'm a fucking child of Greek peasants. What are you? This is my brain. This is what I got. I shoot dogs with silver bullets, hoping that I don't turn. So I'm looking at this and we settle up and he sticks out his hand
mm-hmm.
for a shake. And much like when I'm confronted with back when I did have sex,
right.
Occasionally I would see women and I'd be like, that kind of looks like STD-ish around
right.
the perimeter
right.
of Camp Vagina.
Right.
But then when they actually offered it up, I would be like, I will not make this awkward and actually ask about this matter. And I would either go to town with one part or another of my Adonis-like physique. So he sticks out his hand, and I'm like, fuck it, we're doing this. And I give him, like, this big-ass, hearty handshake.
Right.
And he quickly pulls away from the handshake. And this made me very perplexed and angry. Because I'm like, you've dared me, sir. And I've risen to the occasion. Now, why are you cheating me out of a big, like, man's handshake? Kind of like the prelude to the air arm wrestling in Predator between Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers. You know, you've given me this clasp. you've wanted it. And he's a very sweet dude. So right. I was like, I'm not going to make this shit weird. He doesn't have to know what's going on
right.
inside my warped brain. But then he just gives this limp little, like almost like he just wanted to see if I would take the hand. And then once he does, he was like, ooh, locksmith hand, and pulled away.
But like, did his disposition change after that? Was he no longer a sweet guy?
No, he was fine either way. Uh-huh. But he pulled away very quickly.
Well, maybe he forgot momentarily. Maybe he forgot that forgot in that moment and reached out the limb that he didn't mean to reach out and forgot about it in that moment.
I think... I wanted, 5 seconds of us, just staring each other in the eyes, I wanted some cathartic healing shit to take place. And instead, he was just like, ah.
You do know that just because a limb is damaged, it doesn't mean that if it touches you, it has the power to actually heal you spiritually or metaphysically or physically. You know that, right?
Look, I just wanted to rub it a little bit. Get a bit of its luck on me, and then take that hand.
What is wrong with you?
Take that hand unwashed to the MGM casino.
What is wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. Clearly, the Fairfax County public school system has failed. So, Burning Man.
Great segue.
Yeah, you did your yearly pilgrimage there.
I did.
I think, am I wrong, or the first time we ever recorded anything, you were on your way to Burning Man, or it's been about a year?
I think you might be right. I think, well, the first recording we ever did was at the studio, right?
Yeah, you came to the studio one time,
right?
And I felt bad making you come to the suburbs.
Right.
And so ever since then, I've driven out to D.C., and we record on my fancy little home kit.
So I don't remember. It probably was top of mind at the time because it's, I mean, even 6 months out, you're still sort of mentally and even taking logistical steps towards.
Well, you walked in really tan, wearing just a hospital gown, Dick York style, and then you're like, "Hey, here's some peyote button, boys." And I was
Wow. Yeah, I was probably getting ready for Burning Man then. Yeah.
So you went. This is you refer to them as burns.
Yes. As do people who go there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was your, which burn was this?
This was my seventh or eighth burn. I think it's the eighth burn. Yeah,
and I want to hear about it. I want highlights.
I've actually come to a conclusion over the last year or two, and I think that this burn in particular brought it home that I'm sort of in that middle stage of one's burner experience.
So there's a life cycle to this shit.
Okay, let's put it this way. The week of Burning Man is basically a metaphor for the life cycle of anything.
Okay.
Because you show up and it's dawn and and new and everything's new and you're discovering things, and then towards the middle of the week you get tired and you get angry and surly, and the people who care about you rub you the wrong way and you rub them the wrong way, and things have to be negotiated, and then it's you're sort of like past that and things start getting cool again, and then it all goes away and dies.
You're hurled off the metaphorical balcony of life.
Exactly. What is wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong with you? I think that what I've reached is that stage in life where, and it happens to all of us at any stage in life, where when you're young, everything is new and novel and cool, and love and relationships are new, and you're pie-eyed about certain things. And then, reality starts to creep in, or the numerous responsibilities of reality sort of creep in, that these things have to be taken care of. You have to take those steps necessary to sustain yourself, because you realize that, you're approaching, old age, and, you have to take those steps to make sure that everything's taken care of as you approach your old age. How are you going to make money? Where are you going to live? What are you going to do? Who's going to take care of you? Who are you going to take care of? Right. And I find myself in the sort of middle way of Burning Man. And what I mean by that is, anyone who goes to Burning Man for the first time even their first couple years, their burns are life-changing, mm-hmm. right? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I've never seen anything like it in music and drugs and sex and weirdness and craziness and shouldn't expect and people loving me and people hugging me, right? Right? And then on the other end are people who have been going for the last 25 years, the OGs of Burning Man. And they're almost, you know, they're like... what's the word I'm looking for? Like they're like Buddha, you know. They experience it all. They have the wisdom, right? They've seen their own path, right? Right. And I'm in that middle stage where I'm not really overwhelmed by the festival anymore.
Okay.
And I'm not really, but I don't think I've gained enough wisdom about it to be anything other than a bit slightly disappointed and slightly bored by it.
Do you want to push through that?
I'm going. Trust me. That's by no means me saying fuck Burning Man is so boring. I'm never going back. I'm definitely going back. But I realize I'm approaching middle age for Burning Man. I know that literally I am middle aged. I'm a middle aged guy going to Burning Man. But I'm approaching that sort of middle area where I'm a bit underwhelmed by the things that novice burners are really, really like,
like public sex.
Yeah, come on, seriously. drugs, really? Come on, right? Even the art pieces and the art cars. It's like, oh yeah, there's that art car. I saw him last year. I saw that one last year.
Art cars are like almost soapbox derby racer type things that are gussied up.
Would that they were. Art cars are, or otherwise known as mutant vehicles.
Okay.
I guess that's not the proper name. Mutant vehicles are sort of anything that is like a powered transportation that you've made out of something, right? That could be anything from like a powered tricycle to a golf cart that's done up really cool. Art cars are pretty recognizable. They're big, huge, sometimes 2 and 3 stories. Some of them have like outrageous light shows and outrageous sound systems on them. They're the size. I mean, like they can be as big as this building, and they're mobile, and what they are is like a mobile club that traverses the playa. And you know, there's a couple dozen, 3 or 4 dozen of pieces that size that are doing sort of something similar.
How the fuck do they have gas and stuff out there?
They're powered electronically. They're powered but there is gas and propane out there. You can access that stuff.
But are they propane accessories?
Yes. Because propane is where they like shoot fire and stuff like that, right? There's a couple of art pieces that do that. So I'm sort of at that stage where I'm less wowed by that stuff. And I don't mean that this as a criticism of Burning Man. I mean that as me recognizing that this is where I am in this stage and that I'm sort of looking that when I go to Burning Man, next year I'm probably going to start looking for different things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you've done the same stuff your first 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what that is.
It's nothing untoward or even illegal in some cases. So
okay.
Yeah.
You're not like, well, we're hunting the most dangerous game of all.
It's man.
okay, so none of that.
Me and Val Kilmer. Yeah, that's right.
So what is there, like, what have you done and what is there left to do then
at
this place? Because it sounds to me, I would be very voyeuristic because that's me.
Right.
I'm cerebral.
Right.
I don't participate. So
right.
I'd probably like watch people bone. I would take drugs.
Right.
I would try to find as much food in the sweet desert as possible. I'd look at some art. And because I'm fat and Greek, I would just be like showering every 8-10 hours tops.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's right. you have said as much that you are bathing in sand like a goddamn Bedouin.
Right.
And I can't do that. Like if you saw the oil on the insides of my thighs after a day in DC, it looks like a fucking New York pizza.
I think that you would be surprised at how well you would do at Burning Man. Even just under those circumstances.
I mean, I do have some Middle Eastern blood, so maybe that would kick in.
Yeah, you'd become a warlord out there. I think that's what would happen.
Just a scimitar.
That's right. No, I think it's funny because, like, you know, I did some of the usual stuff that I normally do when I go to Burning Man. Like I taught a couple of workshops, like an improv workshop, as part of like Arcant's gift to the Playa. I did a number of other things, but what I'm sort of discovering is that I'm really not the person that I was going to Burning Man years ago. I'm no longer that guy. Like my Playa name, which is FOMO, which is fear of missing out. Uh-huh. I'm not that guy.
What is this Playa you keep saying?
Is it, well, that's what they call the desert at Black Rock City. Everyone calls it the Playa. You're on the Playa.
Sounds like an Indian garment.
It's Spanish for beach, right?
Okay.
If you were to go, like, one of the best repositories of knowledge and data regarding Burning Man is a website called ePlaya, and that's where everybody sort of says, here's what I did, here's how I set up this camp, here's how I set up this thing that sort of, you know, did very well this year, that kind of thing. I don't think that I'm the guy I was. I don't think that I'm that guy. And one of the things that, you know, and here's another aspect of the Burning Man culture that people talk about. Especially novices and newbies, you know, they talk about when they come back to what we call the default world, the real world, right? Oh my God, my mind is still back at Burning Man. I can't pump. Everything moves slow.
Of course, it's like fucking spring break.
But it's spring break on steroids, yeah. and the normal rat race, you know, and you find yourself, you know, your ears feel clogged because your sound is just even you've experienced different kinds of sounds, and now those sounds are sort of, I really have to decompress and use that kind of language. I find myself not doing that over the last couple of burns, and I think it's primarily because the way I've chosen to live my life ever since going to Burning Man doesn't really look all that different from the way I try to live my life when I'm at Burning Man.
Yeah, you don't have a shitty life. Teach what you like.
Yeah, I'm kind of sort of and this was a conscious decision that I made a couple of years ago to leave behind all that stuff and be more, and I hate this word, intentional about, you know, what I'm doing with my time, how I'm spending my time, that kind of thing. People come back from Burning Man and say, oh my God, I got to change my life. I got to quit my job. I got to live a nomadic life, you know, hanging around in burners, you know, and then, you know, they're back at their jobs as, you know.
Yeah, you actually fucking walked the walk.
I walked away from it. I walked away from a lot of the corporate world, which isn't to say that I'm, you know, I don't work inside corporate organizations frequently. I started my own theater, you know, which was fully informed by Burning Man. So I experience less of that. I experience less of the rhythms, the ups and downs that accompany Burning Man when you're there and accompanying Burning Man when you're not there. Right?
Well, I respect that you walked out of there and actually changed your life.
Yeah, yeah,
the way
I did.
Everyone else said they were going to and didn't.
I actually got in a discussion with some friends, and you know some of these friends, about this very thing recently, where some part of my impatience with burners, it's not with huge swaths of them.
It's that they're fucking cowards that won't change their life. It's
just all the talk, uh-huh. talk, and none of the action. And you know, as I said to one person I was talking about this, I have many faults as a human being. There are a list of faults, and please, trust me, I know what a lot of them are, and I'd be willing to hear more. But one of the faults I don't have is that when I say I'm going to do something, I fucking do it.
That is true. The second time we met, I saw a wasp's nest in the corner of the theater. And you said, I'm going to fuck me that wasp nest.
That's exactly what I did.
God damn
it. And I broke out my appendage.
You dicked apart
that. And I had sex with a wasp nest.
That wasp parchment. You just ripped it.
So, yeah. So, I think that I'm a bit... It's jaded isn't the word. It's bored isn't accurate. The waves that rock people when they come back from Burning Man don't rock me. They don't really do that anymore.
Let me phrase it, and you tell me, and this isn't me being cute for once. We're not going to go back to a certain crime you seem to have a problem with me talking about. Back in the day, this really moved you to your core. You've shifted your life heavily since to align with it, and you are a bit more take it or leave it with this event now because you're not changing all that much. You go there and it's like, this is my life minus showers now. Great.
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe. I mean, I guess the momentum is behind you still going year after year, but I think it's pretty cool that you don't need to have a fake fucking hippie vacation to call out everyone else.
That's right.
You don't have to do that shit and then go back to, you know, like overseeing a Nike sweatshop or
exactly.
something like that.
And plus, there are wasp nests to be fucked. So
exactly. I found a beehive in the alley.
I'm there.
You ready to airtight that bitch?
That's
Let's
right.
Do it. God, what else? So Burning Man, I didn't realize that this wasn't because we did a birthday for the beloved William Kuduk.
Yeah, that's right.
Your student right. and friend and my friend and not student. And you guys, he went to Burning Man.
We did. He did, yeah.
Was it Sachin also?
Sachin didn't go this year.
Okay.
But he's gone in previous years. In fact, that's one of the first places that's where I first met Sachin. Was it Burning
No shit.
Man? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would not trust anyone I met at Burning Man to fucking cut my lawn. But okay, so that's... I don't know why. Like, I never expected you to really get tired of it because you always seem so hyped by it.
Yeah.
But not going to lie, I am like 30% hard that you are not feeling it so much anymore. I don't like I look at your life and I'm like, that is. And if I may be candid here, I felt especially last year that really sidelined the momentum you had of the theater.
Oh,
the
really?
Time. Yeah, going away. And if you stick around, that'd be, you know, just pretty much what I want you to do is become American again and die for your work.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm done.
Like, just no vacations, nothing.
Just work
you
work until I die. Collapse,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
And then everything you've built will collapse like the fucking burned effigy.
Exactly.
And you will have learned out. You
well,
will have lived out burned.
You've convinced me. Thank you for doing that. That's exactly
no. What I mean. I'm trying to remember the first year you left, and it was just like 3 weeks of me. It's prior to football season, so I didn't have that.
So
to look
so wait,
forward
so
to.
I'm so my theater is some sort of like emotional sow for you between summer and football season.
Yeah,
oh,
you are right there.
I'm some sort of, as Sam Kinison put it, an emotional tampon for you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly
right. Right.
You are a desert rose tampon for my heart. I had been really plugged into the theater, like more so than I had realized. I think I had gotten into the classes, and then once the classes ended, I had just gotten single. So instead of those Friday and or Saturday nights,
right,
where I would have gone and not had sex with my girlfriend, I instead was at the theater because I was like, well, I can't just be in my house.
Right, right.
And then you left for like 3 weeks, and I was just like, tapping at the glass of your theater like, is anybody in there?
Help me. Hello.
Help me.
I'm Papa.
Oh, God. Papa's world. It's just me next to a fucking empty pizza box looking at adult fare. Did we want to, I mean...
Well, why don't we talk about the next steps for us in particular and as well as the theater?
Yes. So... Everyone who's listening to this,
mm-hmm.
Sean and I have decided that we are going to try to do, and this was kind of at the behest of Mike Taylor,
mm-hmm.
who is not a burner.
No.
Mike Taylor, your student and friend and my friend and not student, much like William Kuduk. Mike Taylor, I think, is like a business dude. He's the sassy business bitch.
Sassy businessman.
He was saying he thought we should do some sort of live podcast at, like, as a... monthly thing.
Sure.
I personally think probably every 2-3 days would be better. Just give the people what they want.
Right, right, right.
But a recorded live podcast, the two of us, and my gut instinct is absolutely incorporate the audience and incorporate them heavily.
Right.
Because I've done a couple live pods before, and two people intellectually masturbating
yeah.
for an hour
yeah
and you can't see it because this one isn't on YouTube physically masturbating too it doesn't work like unless the audience
yep.
knows you in and out fucking loves you. There's a show called Cumtown. I wish I made that up.
Cumtown is actually done by a former student of mine.
Get the fuck out.
Stavros. Yeah.
You fucking know Stavros?
I know Stav took my improv classes back when I taught at the DC Improv.
Get the fuck out.
Yep. I know Stav.
Oh,
Stavi baby.
Stavi baby.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I thought all you Greek fuckers knew each other. So
no, I was very insulated from the community. Like, I'm like, you know those fantasy movies where like one elf gets left behind?
Right, right.
And then he's like, why are my ears pointy? That was like my childhood, except I'm like, why is there hair on my back? It's like, you're Greek, my son. You're not of these wasps. Wow, I did not know.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Are you still tight with Stav?
Relatively tight. I mean, I've not as tight. He's you know, he's obviously doing other cooler things than
why the
he's actually a touring comedian now. So
oh yeah.
Yeah,
why are you not on that show? Why
well, because
you...
I'm not that funny. I'm not as funny as Stavros. Stavros is already funny when he walked in my class.
You like is that how you felt about me?
Yes.
Oh, thank
That's
God.
That's how I felt about all Greek men in particular.
All right. Man. Man, you saved me there, because, yeah, you said, there's a couple students of yours that you said walked in, like, very, like, Tim Martin.
Tim Martin was one, yeah.
And now I did not know that you were tight with Stavros. What was the last name? Halakios?
You're Greek, you
yeah,
tell me.
Something yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Halakos? Yeah. I forgot. Yeah, Stavi. Yeah, so I saw Come Town Live having never... listened to Come Town previously. Some friends were just like, we're Come Boys. I wish I were making any of this up. Like,
right.
We're Come Boys. Those are the fans of Come Town.
Right.
We're going to the Black Cat to
see
Come Town.
Yeah.
And I watched it live, and they fucking murdered, but that's because everyone in the audience was Come Boys.
So let's get some Come Boys of our own, John.
Yeah, I've been dying to get some Come Boys. Race and age are not important. You can all be my cum boys. Yeah, we are not of cum town stature.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What?
I'm fucking setting a land speed record for utterances of cum town in fucking 5 minute span.
But yeah, let's do a live podcast and let's invite people and. We're still figuring out the format of what that would look
like.
We're brainstorming, but this is going to happen. It's going to happen in the next couple months.
It is. I'm threatening that the way a certain guitarist threatened a certain toddler.
What the fuck is wrong with
gonna...
We're going to get sued. Maybe, well, no, I'm not. You're going to get sued.
Maybe I was talking Mick Mars of Motley Crue. You don't fucking know. I left his name out. I left that British alcoholic son of a bitch, heroin addict, toddler killer's name out. So we wanted to hear from you regarding what you think would work in a context of an improv theater where we can have either one or two people besides us on mic. And shit, I can get more than that,
right,
honestly.
Right.
But we're thinking, yeah, the two of us talking. What would be funny with audience people coming up and joining us? I was thinking... ways in which you and I could play people in their lives, like they relay some incident with their parents,
right?
And then you and I play their mom and dad,
right?
For some sort of brief time,
right?
You play their dad, and I play the balcony.
Seriously, let this die.
Die like
don't
what?
No, don't die go like to the what? Fucking joke. Let this die, or else we're going to be in big trouble.
This is what you taught me. Repetition's funny. You beat it into my head. Reap what you sow, you son of a bitch. So, yeah, we just want to know what you guys think would work with the two of us dicking off like this, improvising, live audience, and getting the audience members involved. If you have any sort of ideas, again, I was thinking we could play people in their lives. They could tell stories about what happened to them at some point. What kind of story should they tell, though? These are the things that we need you to...
I think that we need to think about this even more. And, again, we welcome any ideas or insight you might have.
Yeah, especially we welcome Stavros to come on. Because apparently you've just got this fucking pipeline of Greek comedians.
Yes, that's that was a prerequisite for me to teach at the improv.
Fucking roommates.
Will there be
Giannis
at least
Pappas?
One Greek comedian in every single class?
Dimitri Martin, where is he?
Hey, I don't know. It's weird.
All right, guys, that's about it for me. I'm getting a suit, and Sean did his Burning Man piece for the year. I didn't realize that it's interesting to me. I didn't know that you were thinking of. Are you thinking of walking away, or you're like no?
No, I'm still going back, but I'm sort of. It's one of those where you come
yeah
you come to terms with. your place in this journey.
No, it's come town, not come turn.
So, that's right. Thank you. Sorry about that. That's trademark too. We're going to have some angry Greek comedian suing you and some angry heroin.
Don't name him.
That's
Don't
right.
Name him.
Suing you.
He wrote a song that rhymes with
okay,
Rayra.
Right.
Just okay. Saying it. Yeah, so get in touch. This man, you sound really like a guy who's just sticking around for the kids when it comes to, when it comes down to this desert party of yours.
No, I'm still into it.
All right, cool. All right, guys, hit me up. This is, again, Sean Westfall. That's me. I'm the one if you need to sue. again, I'm Sean Westfall. And by the way, I just wanted to give a couple shout outs. Is it it's Kara who does the Perfect Liars Club? Right?
Yeah, yeah. Kara Foran. Yeah,
Kara.
Yeah.
She walked up to me at the beginning of the last Perfect Liars Club when I was checking in. She heard my last name, and I guess through you had heard the show, and was like, "You are very funny, and that was a good show." And I was moved because I've never had someone that I hadn't like befriended in real life to
right.
very much soften their opinion
right.
of the show complimented before. And that was, I wanted to thank her.
Kara is a badass.
That was a great fucking show.
Yeah, but Perfect Liars Club is a great show.
Yes.
She and another guy named Pierce McManus produce it every month. And it's killer. It's a great format, obviously. And they're very talented hosts. I've been on it like three times now. It's a lot of fun. So, and also a former student. Kara's a former student of mine. So
really,
yeah.
Was she in the same class as Stav?
No, they were separated by a few years.
All right. All right. So you're saying like they are twin come towns, like Dallas.
You know, here's the thing. Now she's not going to listen to the show because you've associated her name with that name, so
it's a fucking we should be so lucky, all of us. I think Cumtown makes $115,000 a month on Patreon.
Really?
Yeah, you could fucking call me Shit County. I don't give a fuck for that amount of money. You could make my legal name that, doodle up my face, tattoo a dick next to my cheek. I don't care. You know what? Cumtown is having the last laugh. Fucking. There's something even better about having taken a show called Goddamn Cumtown, and it's making 115 G's a month. Jesus fuck, what a middle finger to everything, and good on them. Jesus. No, I nothing but absolute awe and respect for them. And Kara and Pierce, because I did love that Perfect Liars Club.
Cool.
In fact, I brought some friends who normally don't do a damn thing in the city, and they just happened to be off that week. And we went and saw the show, and they really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yes. Cool. So check that out, Perfect Liars Club. I don't know why I put that plug in. They didn't pay me or anything.
I run a theater, too, you know.
I just want to crow about that. Your theater is in the lovely Cumtown neighborhood of D.C. No, I'm going to try to be at your theater tomorrow night, which would be when people are hearing this, Friday.
Right.
I'm going to upload this tonight. So Friday, you are performing at the Unified Scene Theater.
I am. Sean. Yeah, yeah.
And it is your group, Artless Bards.
The Artless Bards. Improvised Shakespeare.
Which is always impressive to me. And I'm going to just say this. I have seen a lot of improv in my day. I see it more and more. And one time, you did a show with like an all-star lineup a couple months ago with your buddy Tim Martin
who
has gone through the UCB curriculum, performs there now, and a couple other ringers. Kate, right?
Simes, another former student.
I saw Kate do the last Perfect Liars Club.
Right,
and she was fucking great. And I picked her as the liar because I'm like, she's a performer. They're liars by nature. I'm blowing this for you guys, but I just know she's the liar. And she was actually telling the truth. Point being... you crushed it and you walked off stage and I was like, that was really fucking good. And you were like almost hurt. You're like, why wouldn't it have been?
I sound like an awful human being.
You're just sobbing like you dropped your ice cream. Why did you phrase it like that? And it's because I saw so much lesser improv the previous few months.
Right.
Going through UCB and having to watch some... to be fucking blunt, some shitty shows for class credit.
Right.
And I went to the Magnet Theater. Here's me burning literally every fucking bridge. Every bridge made out of cum. And I didn't like the show.
From which we throw what's his name's.
No, we throw Carrick Lapton's son off a balcony. Get it right.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I switched the damn initials.
Oh, because that's not, no one's, people aren't going to know.
They won't know what we're talking about. I fucking, that's like cracking Ultra, dude. It's cryptic as fuck. And I was kind of burnt out on improv. And then I saw you do it. And I was like, oh, this is why I do this fruity, silly thing. It can be like really amazing when done well. So go to Sean's Theater, Unified Scene Theater. I am helping with some of the classes now there.
That's right.
You might be lucky enough to have me kind of watch from the sideline like an improv cuckold as Sean teaches the class. And that's about it. I'm John. This is Papa's Basement. Find us on YouTube and Facebook and iTunes and Stitcher and review us everywhere and contribute to the Patreon, however the fuck it's pronounced.
Aren't you Greek? Shouldn't you know how that's pronounced?
I don't know, man. I know like 10 Greek words, and they're all like ways to call people like whore and monkey face and stuff like that. You know, my dad was a damn sailor, and he had no patience for teaching us that language. Like, he literally cracked open a Greek book one time. I remember this very vividly, like a Greek children's book.
Right.
And it was just like going through it for us, and I was like, I don't want to do this. He's like, all right. Just went right back to watching fucking Bonanza. He's like, I don't want to do it either. We're done. All right. Speaking of things we don't want to do, and speaking of being done, we are out of here.
Thank you.